T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
It's that time of night, you can't stay uptight. So come and join the people that are feeling all right. Here on Overnight America. Overnight America.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back. Got the last live hour of the show here, and I'm always enjoying our time together. If you ever wanted to message me, another way to do it is online through Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio. You can get it right on there. And I like seeing the interaction on Twitter right now. Don't trust any politician that treats Uncle Sam as their sugar daddy. A lot of great comments so far on that. If you want to go leave one, you can. But I always like when Elvis gives us a call. How are you?
Doing pretty good, my friend. How are you doing?
Doing great. Good to hear your voice.
Good.
What's new?
Good. Okay. Well, first of all, I got to hear that Rubino fella, and I heard him name all the presidents for us.
Right. Yes. He's very good at that. He can do that off the top of his head.
Well, I'm not going to do it, but I can do it too. But I can.
Oh, great.
Wait a minute. I can throw one at you. You name me a president, and I guarantee you, I could tell you who was his vice president. How many was the vice? How many did they have? And if whether or not they died in office.
Okay, so if I give you a president, you'll tell me who their vice president is.
Right, okay. And I'll tell
any
you.
Any of them?
I might even tell you something about what they did, you know, like before.
Okay, here is the president, Andrew Johnson.
Okay, Andrew Johnson was Lincoln's vice president. Andrew Johnson himself did not have a vice president. I don't know who was the president of the Senate at the time, but Johnson didn't have one. Now, he was actually the second Johnson to be vice president. Martin Van Buren, he was the first, I can't think of his name. Martin Van Buren had a Johnson. Lincoln had a Johnson. John F. Kennedy had a Johnson.
Nice. Well, look at that. That's very good. I tried to trick you even to find a president that didn't have a vice president.
Well, I appreciate you trying to do that. Okay, I got another thing I want to talk about, and I'll get off here real quick. Second, I heard this morning when I couldn't sleep on Camel X, they're hunting Bigfoot here in the States.
Here in Missouri or
around? The guy that answered the phone said Oklahoma. I thought it was Nebraska.
Yeah, Oklahoma.
But yeah, they're hunting Bigfoot. And the guy that they interviewed was a state representative said, we don't want to kill it, we want to capture him and study him.
I think I would be worried that it's going to be some dude in a suit that's going to get shot accidentally.
Oh, no.
That's what I'm worried. Like, they're going to go out there and someone's going to be filming for a YouTube page or whatever it is, trying to make some viral video. And it's going to be, they're going to, you know, think they're going for Bigfoot, and they run up and they pull the mask off the guy. And it's like a real sad episode of Scooby-Doo, except the person underneath it's going to be bleeding profusely.
Well, let's hope that cooler heads prevail.
Would you ever go on a Bigfoot hunt?
Oh, goodness, no. I'm scared of a snake or a rabbit or anything. I don't go in the woods.
You know, I've talked Bigfoot a lot on the show, and there's a lot of interest whenever we do Bigfoot talk. I might have to get like a Bigfoot expert back on, and maybe we can get some people to call in and ask questions to him. I'll just have to find who that person may be. All right. Well, Elvis, I'm always impressed with your knowledge of things, so I'm glad that you gave us a call here tonight. Good to hear from you.
Hey, man, you keep up the good work. I really like your show, Ryan.
Thank you very much, Elvis. That's very nice. It's nice to get the compliments every once in a while. I'm always welcome to that. So if you want to call in and compliment the show, feel free. We'll take it at any time. And if you hate the show, then you most likely are going to send me an email or text message. Those are where we normally get the most complaints. But that's okay. As long as you're listening, I'm all right with that. In fact, we're going to have a replay of Rich Rubino coming up in just a few minutes, his book, American Politics on the Rocks. And what Elvis was alluding to there, during the interview with Rich, I asked him, okay, now that we have a new president in the White House, I want you to name every president from Washington to Biden in order. You don't have to tell me much about him. Just, you know, tell me the names. And he's like, okay, let's go. Boom, 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 boom. Biden, and he's there. Of course, he says the actual president's names, but I was following along online. He almost tripped up on one, but oh, he went back and corrected himself. It's amazing. And Elvis has got one of those names or one of those minds too, where he can do that sort of thing. So we'll take a break. If you want to message us online, 314-436-7900 to text us, or Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. It would always be good if you were to drop us a line on there, like the page. It should be fun. So Rich Rubino coming up next few segments. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Rich Rubino. Always enjoy our time with good old Rich Rubino. He's the author of American Politics on the Rocks, politi-geek.com. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ryan?
I'm doing just fine. NASA seems to be on top of their game tonight. They keep releasing things today. I don't know if you like space news or not.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so they posted a video about the Perseverance lander hitting Mars. It was such a cool video. They put some new pictures of Jupiter out tonight, so I'm feeling pretty good. Politics-wise, there's a lot going on still, and I know today is George Washington's birthday officially. It would be February 22nd. Do you have any good stories about George Washington?
Yeah, well, first of all, I know it's his birthday because right down the street there's the town hall. It's called Abbott Hall, and they play it up pretty much every hour for about maybe 15 minutes. They keep playing the bell going on and off, so I've been hearing it all day.
What's the significance of the? Is there a Washington Bell story or something, or is it just the way that they commemorate it?
I think it's the way that they basically commemorate it is on his birthday. A lot of towns on, say, July 4th and George Washington's birthday, not President's Day, but his actual birthday, and today's his actual birthday. So they'll, lots of municipalities will put the bells on, and a lot of times people will say, you know, what's going on? They won't necessarily make the connection about what exactly it's about.
But I see.
What's interesting about George Washington is the whole idea of political parties basically started with him but not by him. He was very much against the idea of there being political parties. If you go back to, you know, the Federalist Papers, you can go back to Federalist 10, for example, James Madison really warned against the idea of factions, meaning essentially which would become political parties. But they kind of were effectuated or created, if you will, whether he, you know, without his kind of permission or him kind of saying, you know, I want to have political parties. But essentially what happened under his administration is Thomas Jefferson, the Secretary of State, kind of formed his own party, the Democratic Republican Party. And then on the other side, you had the Federalist Party, which was Alexander Hamilton's party, his Secretary of Treasury. The Democratic Republican Party was more or less kind of what you'd say almost the Libertarian Party today. They wanted a very small government in terms of defense expenditures, in terms of having a agrarian republic. On the other side, you had folks like Alexander Hamilton who wanted more expansive governmental powers. And essentially, for example, he wanted there to be a national bank. So that's kind of where they formed. But if you read George Washington, you know, even his farewell address, he warns of the baleful effects of the spirit of party. But they kind of came, without his permission. But most people believe that he was probably more sympathetic to Hamilton than he was to Jefferson's vision.
Wow. You know, recently, did you see the news story about how there was a auction that had George and Martha's hair, lock of hair?
Oh, yes, I did see that, locks of hair, yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Let's see if I can find how much this thing went for. But there's an auction house, and it's kind of fascinating to think some of the things they get their hands on. I don't know how they authenticate it, but to like I was just looking at the price that some of these go for. It's too bad that these items were not up for auction after the new stimulus checks come out, because I'd be tempted to bid on some of these. But either way, if you wanted to purchase a George Washington signed letter, you could do it for, let's see, the sold price came for about $5,400. That'd be kind of cool. I don't know how much the hair went for.
The other thing is, how do you authenticate the signature?
Who knows? There's very good people out there. If they could authenticate Michael Jordan's signature down to a T. Yeah, you're right. George is not there to figure it out. But then again, I guess you can find historical documents that are inside the archives that would be able to do that. But I don't know. Some of these different items are cool. I was actually looking at some of them when they were up. And if you wanted to get some of the lesser known president signatures, you can do it for a couple $100. And I thought that'd be kind of a cool collection to kick off. Maybe if you really wanted Washington's hair, though, maybe you can clone them.
Absolutely. I remember there was this. I remember I always regretted about 15 years ago, there was a store going out of business. And I remember walking in there. And they had, I mean, they were really, really expensive, but there were all sorts of pictures about just about every president, particularly folks like Benjamin Harrison and Grover Cleveland, and they were all signed. How you authenticated, I don't know, but there were a lot of signed photos, and they always wanted, you know, thinking going back and, you know, potentially getting those, what it would be like to actually kind of have those. But I will say just a kind of word of, I guess this would be kind of a, advice for people is that if you ever do get an autograph from a politician or a president or a vice president, make sure it's in the sweet spot of a Rawlings baseball. For some reason, sports card collectors, sports memorabilia collectors, they don't only necessarily distinguish between getting a signature of Willie Mays. They also like signatures of politicians. And even if you Google it, you can see, you know, Richard Nixon autographed baseballs will go for, you know, $500. So you see that sometimes when there's a celebrity coming, you'll see lots of times a lot of people will bring baseballs, even though those aren't baseball players, because people that are in the sports card industry also like politicians and celebrities signing as well.
Oh, I like that, because I saw one on the same auction site. It was a Ronald Reagan signed baseball, and it made me wonder, why would they have that up for auction? But you're right. The sports, there's always a crossover with those sort of things. So happy birthday to good old George Washington. I wanted to talk to you about some conventions and things that are going on. CPAC is going on. It's something that is like a conservative conference. President Trump will be speaking there. Vice President Pence will not be speaking there. They normally have a lot of popular names that are conservatives, and it made me wonder a lot about what's going on today, because we seem to be always trying to define what conservatism is anymore, and it seems like that definition changes almost by the year.
Oh, it's fascinating in terms of, I guess, where the Republican Party is in terms of conservatism. I was talking about the political parties. If you go back to actually the founding of the Democratic Party, the founding of the Democratic Party was very similar to kind of the way we perceive conservatism under the 1980s and the 1990s. It was very much for free trade. It was actually for less government. Very similar. And then the Republican Party was actually founded on more funding for the railroads. It was founded on, there was actually a split between those who wanted to abolish slavery and those who wanted to simply abolish it in the territories, like Lincoln, who was more or less kind of somewhat of the moderate, and there are folks like Thaddeus Stevens who were more the conservatives. But in terms of how you actually define conservatism, I think you have to go back. There was this fight between, so in 1908, Theodore Roosevelt endorsed William Howard Taft as his successor over his own vice president, Charles Fairbanks, thinking that William Howard Taft would be more progressive. And Taft was progressive in some respects, but Theodore Roosevelt did not think he was progressive enough. So in 1912, he challenged him first in the Republican primaries, won the primaries, most of them, but then lost to the convention because Taft had it sewed up. So he said, I'm stripped to the buff, and I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, and then he runs as a progressive. So that's kind of where I think the modern split began. But then you go to the 20s, in terms of Harding and Coolidge specifically, probably the closest to where Donald Trump was in terms of wanting less intervention overseas, wanting to curtail wanting to curtail both legal and illegal immigration, and in terms of free trade, being somewhat protectionist. So that's kind of where it was in the 1920s. And there's this battle between the progressives and the conservatives. Throughout the 1920s, for example, you had folks like William Boris, senator from Idaho, very progressive. And actually in 1924, the Progressive Party nominated Robert La Follette, the governor of Wisconsin, governor and then senator of Wisconsin, who was kind of an opponent of Coolidge's conservatism. Now, fast forward to the 1950s, you had the split again at the Republican convention that year. You had Robert Taft, who was basically a Harding, Coolidge Republican, running in the primaries and losing to Dwight Eisenhower, was more of an establishment, more liberal Republican. Then Taft becomes a good soldier during the Eisenhower's administration. Then he dies later on in 1953. Then you go back to up to 1964, when you had the establishment wing. Basically, the establishment wing tends to be more wealthy and more liberal. And Nelson Rockefeller that year, the governor of New York, was kind of the early front runner. He ended up getting in some his own personal foibles. One of them being there was he had gotten a divorce and he gotten remarried. But Barry Goldwater that year actually won the nomination. And when Barry Goldwater won the nomination, he was really the first real conservative probably to be nominated, probably since Coolidge in 1924. And at the convention, he did not try to temporize his rhetoric. He said extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue. So he became a tribune of the conservative wing. As a result, a lot of the Rockefeller people did not support him in the general election. So Goldwater ends up winning only six states. And then you go all the way up to 1976. You had Ronald Reagan versus Gerald Ford. That was kind of the split. So there's always been the split in the 1980s, George H.W. Bush and John Connally, the more moderate wing, versus Ronald Reagan, who represented the more conservative wing. So that's kind of where it's always gone. And I think what Donald Trump did after George W. Bush, after George W. Bush's more progressive stance on issues like immigration, Donald Trump kind of brought it back to where it was, I think, in many respects to the status quo ante under Coolidge and Hoover. But there's always a battle between what conservatism is. I think a lot of conservatives view themselves kind of on the outside of the Republican Party. Many of them view themselves conservative first and Republican second, where some of the more moderate members say, essentially, we have to win an outright majority. That means we have to kind of temporize our rhetoric a little bit. So that's kind of where the bloodline split comes from.
Yeah, you look at where the Republican Party started in going back to Abe Lincoln, and you go back even further. So if George Washington was in politics today, what party do you think he'd be closest aligned to?
I think he'd probably, it's hard to say because, I mean, the changes of politics, there have been so many changes in terms of ideology between the two parties, but I think he'd probably be closer to the Democrats simply because he was somebody who tended to favor federal power, you know, for example, trying to put down the Whiskey Rebellion. He was somebody who I think more sympathized more with Alexander Hamilton's view of there being a more expansive government, at least the federal role, whereas I think Thomas Jefferson would probably be more of a Republican or even a Libertarian because he really wanted there to be a devolution of power. He wanted it to come down to the states. But you also have other issues, though. For example, you know, George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan were very much into increasing defense spending, as was Donald Trump. Whereas Thomas Jefferson's vision was for a truncated national defense as well. So that's where it gets a little bit iffy. But I think Jefferson would probably be more Republican. Washington would probably be more of a Democrat.
You got anything against wooden teeth?
I'm glad I don't have wooden teeth.
George Washington, happy birthday to him. Do you mind holding on after the break? I'd love to talk
sure.
to you about some of the current senators. Now, there's been a lot of real close votes. We know we have some confirmation hearings going on, but talking about the stimulus packages, for example, we could see a lot of, right down the middle, 50-50. So there are some very important senators right now that hold a lot of influence. So maybe we'll talk about that after the break. Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks, is his book, Politi-Geek.com, and you can find him online. Just do a quick search for Rich Rubino, P-O-L, on there. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Here we are in Overnight America. Thanks for spending the time with us. You could be doing anything tonight. I mean, you could have your windows open and just enjoy the nice, you know, when 50 degrees in St. Louis feels like it's about 80, take advantage of things like this. So we're going to continue with our conversation with Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. You can find his book online and also politi-geek.com. And Rich, if people wanted to find you online, where can they find you?
Yep. Just go to Twitter and type in Rich Rubino Paul, or you can go to politi-geek.com, or you can go to Facebook and just type in Rich, and then last name Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O.
Great. So I wanted to talk about some of the senators that have a lot of influence as of right now, because I was listening to a speech from Chuck Schumer talking about how they're passing this stimulus bill, another $1.9 trillion, and he made it very clear. He said, oh, we'll pass this even with no Republican support, which made me think, okay, you're going right down the middle. It's 50-50 in the Senate with the tiebreaker going with the vice president, who's a Democrat, which means that they could technically do that. However, there are some wild cards in the Senate that could go either way, and they hold a lot of power right now.
Well, you know, it's fascinating. It's really, if you think about who's probably the most powerful person in this nation right now, in many respects, it's Joe Manchin of West Virginia. I mean, on every single vote, just about, he is unpredictable. It's fascinating. I mean, he was the only Republican, for example, who voted for Kavanaugh, for example, to go to the Supreme Court, and that ended up helping him certainly when he was running for re-election in 2018. But he's someone who's very socially conservative on issues like abortion, on issues like gun control, on economics. He's more or less, he's a little bit more populist, but generally it comes down to, in terms of lobbyists, he's kind of the one person that I think every lobbyist tries to go after before anybody else, because he's that 50th vote. He's far and away the most conservative Democrat. He's the one Democrat, when he comes out, for example, and says that he does not want to liquidate the filibuster, it actually matters simply because of his positioning right now. And it's something that potentially he could really use this as bargain for West Virginia. And if he wants to do that, in many respects, you know, get an appropriation for something like this in order for trade that for something for the state, trade that for a vote, something to that effect. But he was someone who certainly Donald Trump consistently courted him, according to Joe Manchin. Donald Trump would call him out of the blue, and he would essentially say, you know, I know you're a centrist senator. I want you to be able to work with me. And there was these rare instances, for example, when Donald Trump would deliver a State of the Union address, when virtually every Democrat would be sitting down, and then Joe Manchin kept standing up, and he'd applaud. And there's video footage of AOC kind of sitting behind him, kind of giving him what appeared to be kind of a dirty look because he was standing up. Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, by the way, also stood up a couple times and got kind of the evil eye from some of the more progressive members. But you know, he's very influential. I think the biggest fear, by the way, that Democrats have is the Republicans will do something to court him so that he actually becomes a Republican. I don't think that's realistically going to happen, but there is precedent. The other side, back in 2001, remember Jim Jeffords, very liberal Republican from Vermont, actually after courting from Tom Daschle, the minority leader, Harry Reid, the minority whip. They courted him, and they were trying to court him. They were trying to court Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island. Finally, they got him. He was disaffected with where the Republican Party was going. He says, you know what? I'm not going to become a Democrat, but I'm going to caucus with the Democrats, meaning essentially that the entire shift, the entire balance of power in the United States Senate shifted from Republicans to Democrats. They gave him a chairmanship of a committee in return. But that's the biggest fear, I think, is that the Democrats there'll be alienation in some respect, and Joe Manchin just says, you know what, screw it, I'm going to become Republican. Maybe potentially the Republicans could give him a very important chairmanship, but I don't think it's necessarily going to happen. I think he's probably in the best possible position for his state and certainly for his own political future, just simply to kind of stay in the middle right there. And on every single vote, every important vote, you have every lobbyist, every member of the media, every member of the United States Senate going to Joe Manchin, because in many respects, you know, this is Joe Manchin's Washington.
You want to be great, kind of like in sports when there's a player that's ready to declare they're going to sign with another team, and they like sit down, there's a press conference, Joe Manchin walks in and he puts on like a Republican hat and announces that he's changed teams. Well, is 2001 the last example of that happening? Because it's got to be pretty rare in the history of the Senate where you see a lot of active sitting senators deciding to switch parties.
It happened, yeah, it happened once, and that was the last, I think, that was the last major one to do it. There have been House members who have done it. The odd one was, for example, Michael Forbes from New York, because he actually shifted from the Republicans to the Democrats, but he shifted at the time when he was in the majority party, so he shifted to a minority party, which means you have less influence. That was a very odd one. In terms of actual people who have switched from the Democrats to the Republicans, in 1994, the day after Bill Clinton suffered a 52-seat defeat in the U.S. House of Representatives, Richard Shelby from Alabama, who is voting with Republicans in most things anyways, announced he's going to become a Democrat. He was a Democrat. He announced he's going to become a Republican, and it actually worked out for him because he's still in the United States Senate today. He's 86 years old, and he just announced he's not running for re-election. And then a year later, Ben Nighthorse Campbell, another conservative Democrat from Colorado, switched and he became a Republican. But what's interesting with him is right before he switched, this is a few months after Shelby, there was a very important vote, and that vote was who was going to be the minority leader of the United States Senate. Came down to Tom Daschle from South Dakota and Chris Dodd from the state of Connecticut. And Ben Nighthorse Campbell, right before he switched, was the deciding vote for Tom Daschle. Then he becomes a Republican essentially the next week. So that was something that was very interesting. There have been switches, and certainly in history, Strom Thurmond was one, for example. He was a Democrat. He ran as the states' rights of the American Party's nominee in 1948. He actually switched from Democrat. He became a Republican. So there currently have been some examples. There have been examples in the House of Representatives. Phil Graham, the one who ran for president in 1996, was originally a Democrat, and he actually switched to the Republican Party. But when he switched, he actually resigned his seat. So he resigned his seat back in 1983, and then they had a special election, and he won that special election as a Republican. So that was very interesting phenomenon. But generally speaking, it's rare and it's very hard. I think, you know, when you actually run in a party's primary and you go to the benefactors in that party and say, I want to be the nominee, and if I'm going to be the nominee, I'm going to win for the party. Then as soon as you get there, you change and you join another party. I'll say one more example would be Jim Johnson, actually the governor of the state of West Virginia, ran as a Democrat, and then the next year he actually became a Republican. So there is some precedent in West Virginia for that.
Wow, okay. I wonder, too, when it comes to the power shift in the Senate, in a lot of years you find that there are pretty, you know, narrow margins, even though there's one party that might hold the majority and something like that. Is there usually a case where there are senators that could switch and vote with the other party and they have been under the spotlight? Or is that somewhat of a unique thing to what we've seen in the past couple of decades?
No, absolutely. And it used to be that there was a lot more shifting in terms of Democrats voting for Republican proposals, Republicans voting for Democrat proposals. Remember, for example, when Bill Clinton got the Budget Discretionary Act of 1993 passed, he had six Democrats. Now, one of them was Richard Shelby, but he had six Democrats that actually voted against him on that. Folks like Sam Nunn from Georgia, David Bourne from Oklahoma, when they used to have those conservative Southern Democrats who are basically all but extinct today. And then it actually came down. Remember, even though he had six votes to deal with, it actually came down to one vote, and that was Bob Kerry of Nebraska. And Bob Kerry, who had run against Bill Clinton, had a very bitter campaign against Bill Clinton in the 92 Democratic primaries, actually became the one that saved that act, because after some lobbying and essentially Bob Kerry said, I don't want to be the person that's destroyed Bill Clinton's presidency, and Bob Kerry will end up giving him that vote. So you have seen that, a lot of that in history. If you go back, by the way, votes like the Civil Rights Act of 1964, you had a very interesting alliances on that, because you had Lyndon Johnson signed it, but you had Southern Democrats in an alliance with Western Republicans against the legislation, and then you had Northern Democrats in an alliance with the kind of liberal Republicans, folks like Ed Brooke in Massachusetts, for example. Well, he wasn't there at the time, but that type of a Republican. So you used to have a lot of issues where the Democrats had to work with. Had to work kind of cross party. I think the last time you really saw a major piece of legislation where a Democrat had to get more Republican votes than Democrat votes is probably NAFTA with Bill Clinton in 1993 when he was working with Bob Dole and he's working with the Republican whip at the time. It was Newt Gingrich of Georgia against the Democratic leadership in the House in terms of the minority leader Dick Gephardt and the minority whip. David Bonnier, and they got it through. And then you had kind of this weird alliance of, you know, Republicans and Bill Clinton working against Democrats and some more or less economic nationalist Republicans like Jesse Helms in North Carolina. Very interesting alliance.
I'm wondering, too, when it comes to different organizations getting together, giving speeches, things like that, like the CPAC that's going down. Had there just been a rise of big names in political movements that are non-politicians? Is that a new phenomenon, or do you find that's happened a lot throughout the course of politics?
There have been certainly examples in history, and usually they're businessmen, oftentimes they're military people. For example, in 1952, there was talk that if Robert Taft got the nomination, he would choose Douglas MacArthur as his running mate, someone who had no political experience, but he had military experience. There have certainly been presidents who have come out of that, Zachary Taylor in 1848, certainly Dwight Eisenhower, Ulysses S. Grant. And there certainly have been businessmen that people have looked at and said that they should potentially be a major presidential candidate. Lee Iacocca, for example, at one point looked at it. Ross Perot looked at it a couple of times. More at the state level, sometimes you do have people that kind of come out of the acting world, and certainly the state of California, but he had Ronald Reagan, but Ronald Reagan did have political experience before becoming governor. He was chairman of the Screen Actors Guild. Arnold Schwarzenegger in 2003, although he had worked on some initiatives in 2002 when the ballot that got through actually for after-school programs, we did have some political experience. The one a lot of people point to is Jesse Ventura, but he didn't come from nowhere. A lot of people don't realize this, but he was actually mayor of Brooklyn Park, which at the time was the sixth biggest city in the state of Minnesota. So if he was anybody else and he had those credentials, no one would essentially look at him as some sort of an anathema. They would just say a politician running for governor, because people immediately though associated him with his actions in the ring. So they said this guy came right out of the ring and decided he wanted to become governor, but he actually did have some political experience prior to that.
I interviewed him once when he had a conspiracy theory book that came out.
Oh, I remember that show, yes.
Yeah. It had all kinds of stuff in it. And the interview was just as wild as any of the interviews he's ever given. He's something else, I'll tell you what. Not a fan of his, but he gives a wild interview. So I wanted to challenge you, Rich Rubino, you don't mind, because we've done this before, but we haven't done it since there is a new person in the White House with Joe Biden. And maybe it was last year or maybe 2 years ago. You just impressed everyone by giving every president an order. I'm hoping we can do that again now that we have a new president in the White House. If you can just give every president's name, you don't have to worry about the years they served, because that's, you know, that's fine. If you can just give every president an order from memory, from George Washington to now, do you think you can do it?
Yes.
Okay. I'd love you to give it a try.
Washington, Adams, Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, and then John Quincy Adams, Andrew Jackson. And then after Andrew Jackson was Martin Van Buren, then William Henry Harrison, James K. Polk, and then and then John Tyler came in 1841, and then in 1845 was James K. Polk. In 1849 would have been Zachary Taylor. Then he was succeeded by Millard Fillmore until 1853. I have to do it with the years. And then in 1853. In 1853, you had Franklin Pierce, then James Buchanan came in 1857, and then after that was Abraham Lincoln, who came in 1861. He died in 1865. Andrew Johnson succeeded him, left in 1869. Ulysses S. Grant came in and served till 1877. Then after him was Rutherford B. Hayes. 1877 to 1881. And then 1881 was James Garfield. Then Chester A. Arthur, 1881 to 1885. And then after Chester Arthur was Grover Cleveland, the only one to serve two non-consecutive terms. He was 1885 to 1889, lost to Benjamin Harrison. Then after Benjamin Harrison came, he came back in 1893, and then he served till 1897. Then William McKinley, 1897 to 1901. And then Theodore Roosevelt succeeded him from 1901 to 1909. William Howard Taft from 1909 to 1913. Then John Hoodweiser Smith from 1913 to 1923. And then, no, I was making that up. And then Woodrow Wilson from 1913 to 1921. Then Warren G. Harding, 1921 to 1923. Calvin Coolidge, 1923 to 1929. And then Herbert Hoover, 1929 to 1933. FDR, 1933 to 1945. Harry S. Truman, 1945 to 1953, Dwight D. Eisenhower, 1953 to 1961, John F. Kennedy, 1961 to 63, LBJ, 63 to 69, Richard Nixon, 69 to 74, Gerald R. Ford, 74 to 77, Jimmy Carter, 77 to 81, Ronald Reagan, 81 to 89, George H. W. Bush, 89 to 93, Bill Clinton, 93 to 2001, George W. Bush, 2001 to 2009, Barack Obama, 2009 to 2017, Donald Trump, 2017 to 2021, and then Joe Biden, 2021.
Nice. Congratulations. You got them all correct. And you almost stumbled there for a second. You missed. Who was it? Taylor? Zachary? No, hold on.
I said I have to do it with the years because I said William Henry Harrison. I said 1840, and then I skipped over John Tyler, who succeeded him. Then I went to James K. Polk. Then they said, "Oh, but then there was Tyler right in between."
Right. Okay. So here's another question: if you were to take the official presidential portraits, who was the last president to have facial hair?
Benjamin Harrison.
Benjamin. Well, if I go back, and I know, let's see, Benjamin Harrison. If I go back, Taft had a mustache.
Oh, facial hair at all? I was thinking a beard. You're right.
Oh, yeah. Then good old Teddy Roosevelt had a mustache. And then Grover Cleveland. And then Harrison was the first to have a beard after that.
He was the last one to have a beard. That's what I was thinking, not facial hair generally, but you're right.
They really need to bring that back in the future.
And mutton tops, too.
Oh, let's bring the mutton tops. Let's do it all. So if people wanted to find you online, where can they look you up?
You can just go to Facebook and type in Rich and then last name Rubino, R-U-B-I-N-O. Or go to www.polita-geek.com or go to Twitter and type in Rich Rubino, P-O-L.
So when you were a kid and it was time for the school talent show, would you stand up and name all the presidents in order?
No, I don't think they had a school talent show. But I did used to have the little figurines, and I used to look at all the figurines, and I do remember looking at all the presidential books and going through about each different president. And then I remember having cards that would say three or four things about each president. So for some reason, I just got a fascination with them for that reason.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Rich Rubino, you can find him online, polita-geek.com. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. I love our Monday hookups.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Maybe next time we'll do vice presidents.
If you could do that, that's even more impressive. Oh, wow. You're in the top percentage of people that could even name all the presidents, number one. Now, if you could do vice presidents, you may be the only person right now in America that can do that. Rich Rubino joins us on the Bomarito Automotive Group guest line. Super impressive, as always. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Just a couple of things I wanted to get to before we go for the night, and then we go to the replay hours. Something pretty amazing that NASA has released in the last couple of hours. It was the video of the Perseverance Mars rover lander descending onto Mars, and it's remarkable. So the cameras were turned on during this descent. You have it going from space, but you see the landscape of Mars, and we're talking, this thing is just dropping. You can see the actual deployment of everything. I mean, you can see the parachute. You can see the heat blaster panels and plates falling off. And there's a commentary of NASA explaining what you're looking at. You can see the wheels moving into place because they had to, you know, fit it into this. And keep in mind, this thing weighs a ton. about the size of a Jeep or so. It had this one very fancy type of, it almost looked like a helicopter type of deal, but it was like a drone that was slowly setting it down onto the surface of Mars. And then as soon as the rover itself was flat on the ground, this thing flew off and out of its way so it wouldn't actually get in the way of this Mars rover. It was awesome. And also released today was the sound from Mars that finally happened. We know that there was going to be a microphone put in, and I didn't exactly know when this microphone would be turned on, but now we are able to hear what it sounds like if you were there on the rover. Take a listen.
I invite you now to, if you would like to, close your eyes and just imagine yourself sitting on the surface of Mars and listening to the surroundings. If I could have the first one, please.
Pretty amazing. It almost sounds like you're sitting in a server room, doesn't it? Now, keep in mind, there's a reason why it sounds that way. It's because the actual Mars rover itself makes that noise. It sounds like if you, again, a server room would be the best way to put it, when there's a bunch of computers and the fans are running and you can hear them just silently. That's as silent as they can get in the background. But, you know, they got to keep those computers cold and get the hot air blown out of it. And that's what that does. So they actually found a way to filter that sound out. If you want to hear what it sounds like without it, it's windy on Mars. Isn't that cool? You can go listen to that yourself. It might be better for you to put some headphones in and hear it there. But otherwise, that does it for us on Overnight America. The replay hours are coming up with Brad Young. He's a partner at Hairstyle Fisher & Young. The Supreme Court made a couple of decisions today, or at least a couple of statements, I should say. And also, Ryan Wiggins is on our sister station, 97.1. He wrote a book, a fictional book called The Life of Human. He's our special guest with a very special guest reviewer. My wife joins because she read the book, and I wanted her to be here for that. So enjoy the rest of your night. Enjoy the replay hours. We'll be back again tomorrow at 8 o'clock. We'll see you. Bye.
Beats with the lonely rain, wishing I could see your face again. Change the dial on the radio, find something playing kind of bluesy and slow. If things were only like they used to be, we'd be lying in love tonight. I wish you'd call me on the telephone.
Really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!